Hello everyone, and welcome to the UA Tech Working Group meeting on the 6th of July. On the call currently, there's Dennis, there's Jim, there's Mo Hafiz, there's Sarmad, and Satish. Hand it over to you, Satish. Please go
ahead. Thanks very much, Mohammed, and welcome to this UA Tech meeting. We do not have the vice chair yet, Desalin, but he'll be joining us. Mohammed, can you share the agenda on the Zoom, please?
Sure. Okay. Can you see it now?
Yeah, we can see it now. So we have included Dennis's point about the Chinese dot. We have it as item number two. Is there any other item that needs to be added to the agenda? Any under AOB? Not seeing any hands. I think we'll go ahead with this agenda. So we have the last, the minutes of the last meeting. So the action items are summarized here below the agenda. These are, one is considering registration of a test domain in every IDN / TLD in order to create test mails. So this is apparently ongoing. So as soon as it is decided either way, it will come back to us. So the date of the next meeting was already decided. And then the review of UASD 004 and proposing a new framework or methodology. So this is to be completed in 2 months, by which I presume July and August. So this becomes a priority item. So let's get started with the agenda. Are there any comments on the, apart from Dennis's comment about the, about reconsidering removal of the Chinese dot, are there any other comments on the minutes of the last meeting? Yes, Sarman, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was not able to attend last time. I guess just looking at this, are we suggesting creating one test domain under each IDN TLD? Is that what the intention
yes,
is?
Yes, I think we thought it is a bit much, but that was the point, that every domain should have a test domain.
I guess the question is, what would, for example, we intend to, I guess, achieve from it. So for example, if we have three Chinese domain names, do we, I guess question is that, do we feel that acceptance rate of one over the other, is that what we are trying to determine versus, I guess, are we just trying to determine whether Chinese TLD is accepted by a particular, for example, application.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I forget the exact context in which this discussion took place. Mohammed, do you have any recollection of what this particular, the intent behind this was? Creation of test mails for every TLD.
Sure. I think on the last call, the members indicated that the document test cases were mostly using Arabic and Chinese scripts, and there was lack of diversity and other scripts included. So the request was to add more or even all the current active IDN TLDs and samples of the long TLDs as well for testing, and registering email accounts for testing as well. So I think what Sarmad is saying, that when you have, let's say, instead of one sample of a Chinese TLD, what if you have, let's say, three? Will you be, do you have preference in terms of selecting one as a sample, or you want to just be inclusive and have them all? Internally, we did request ICANN technical support and IT to look at this, and we're waiting for the feedback in terms of the test samples. But I think the request could be for the working group, do you want to be inclusive to include all, or you want then later on maybe lower that to some samples in the case of you have multiple TLDs using the same script like the Chinese?
Thanks, Mohammed. We have two hands in the queue. We have Jim and then we have Sarmad. Jim, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Jim. And I'm sorry, I also missed the meeting where this got discussed. So I'm coming at this kind of fresh, but I can make two observations. One is there's a difference between adding more domain names to the document as examples of possible legal domain names versus implementing, registering domains at under those names and having email service active at those domains. It seems to me we can keep those two things separate and we can add diversity to the document without implementing lots of domains. But secondly, as I think about how to persuade people to work on their universal acceptance, it seems it would be much more compelling to ask people to test with a live domain that had, for instance, an email robot where you send it an email and it sends you back an email reply. And that you can, we tell people they're welcome to test that as much as they want. So having the live domain is a useful test vehicle. And then having those live domains be in the script of the person who's doing the testing or of the organization that's doing the testing makes it more compelling. So for example, if I'm a Thai software company trying to implement universal acceptance because of Thai speaking customers, a Chinese test domain is interesting, but a Thai test domain is really compelling. And similarly for every other script. So when I saw this, I don't know the reasoning, but the first thing that came to my mind was this is a great tool for evangelism and marketing. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. It was exactly about email robot response system that the context was when we discussed this, that we can send mail to that system and the system will respond back. And we checked if it's going to be an overkill or extremely budget-wise infeasible. But we were told that even if you do for every domain, it is not going to cost as much because you can use the same server and configure all this domain onto that. So that was what happened last time. Sarmad, please go ahead.
Thank you. So there are a couple of points of view I want to present here, both from the perspective of actually managing all this and also from the perspective of testing all this. So I think we need to probably see the burden of financial cost as well as management cost when we register, if we are saying about, think about 100 or so, just a rough estimate of ID and TLDs, of which I think about 60 plus are Chinese. And then there are obviously a few in Arabic and so on. So I can't remember all the exact numbers, but I remember there are more than 60 in Chinese out of 100. So I guess the challenge first question was, which I asked, was that, why can't we just test with one Chinese and why do we have to, what additional information having 59 more Chinese TLDs is providing us? And I guess the question to ask is that information worth the extra management and cost, which obviously we'll have to bear registering, and not just registering once, but actually maintaining them year on year. So that's obviously one issue. And then even if we set up a single mail server, We still have to set local, obviously, settings to make sure that, you know, those emails getting to mail servers are actually eventually resolved and replied. So there's obviously additional cost there as well. However, the other challenge, of course, is that one of the things which was felt was that, you know, if you have, let's say, 100 email addresses, it becomes equally more taxing for somebody who's actually using that document to test. Because they would obviously need to go through each of those test cases, which could be, you know, as many as 100 in this case. And if you are really, I guess, looking at domain names, then I guess question is then why not just, you know, then why not all the long ones as well? So I think this can actually eventually grow very large if you use the same reasoning for domain names. So I guess the suggestion, so it's even from a tester's perspective, it becomes difficult to manage. So one suggestion which was made, I guess a few calls back, was that to address the diversity, which obviously is something significant, we should actually, one, what we could do is we could register one TLD per script. And that will mean that, you know, if we have, you know, we can do it within maybe 15, 16, 19, 20 maximum, I think, scripts which are supported currently in TLDs. And we can achieve the same amount of, diversity without really increasing the management and financial overload. So, and also testing overload for testers. So again, I guess question is coming back is, you know, what does going that extra 80 beyond, let's say, the 20 diverse set provides us in addition, which I guess motivates this these registrations. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarmad. So, Satish,
the suggestion there's a comment on the chat you want to run.
This is Jim's comment.
It's also Dennis, and you have Jim's.
Yeah, comment, but we just read it out.
Okay, there's a suggestion from Dennis to start with selecting domain names based on, I guess, scripts, and later on augment as we need in terms of diversity. Jim is saying having an example from each script is one thing. Have an example from each TLD or several for each script is a different matter. And I want also to remind you, I think that on the last meeting on the USG 004 review, item number 27, I think it's the same proposal as Saramad's suggestion has been noted, which is said that it was proposed to add a list of 28 scripts currently delegated used in the root zone. So I think, yes, those are the comments about using samples. Yeah.
Okay, so I think the general consensus that is emerging is that why don't we start with one domain name per script and then see if it requires the numbers need to be raised later as we get into the process of testing. I think that is fine with me also. So Mohammed, can we note that as a suggestion?
Sure. I just want to make sure as well I'm capturing this well. There was also a suggestion to include long TLDs as well, not just RDM.
Yeah, that will be also one case, one maybe the longest or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So thanks for the discussion. Let's go back to the agenda. Yeah, now about the agenda item number two. So Dennis, can you tell us why you think removal of the Chinese dot does not make sense?
I think you can hear me okay?
Yes.
Hello, Satish. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to elaborate on that one. And just to clarify, this is not a UA measurement working group request, rather a myself and my capacity of a UA tech member reacting to the nodes. So, and maybe let me do a, maybe ask this quick question. What's the, before I elaborate, because I'm assuming certain things reacting to that. So what's the motivation of removing the open dot case?
I don't know who it was it Sarmad or was it Mohammed who was there when the discussion took place. I think it is because it is not really used or relevant.
Right. So I'm assuming, I see Sarmad's hand, maybe he can clarify the context of it.
Yeah, if you can clarify the... Please go ahead, Sarmad.
Yes, thank you. So I think there was, I have to go back and check, but there was probably some mapping around these things, which was done in IDNA 2003, but this was taken out in IDNA 2008, I think. So one of the things we need to actually, I guess the question is that if you want to keep the open dot, the question is, what is the motivation or what is the reference? We probably need to do more homework because this is obviously certainly not the general practice of using, I guess, Chinese dots. If it's coming from the request is coming from the Chinese community to map it, I think we probably need to have a very strong reference for it. It is fine to include, but then we obviously need to have a motivation from the Chinese community. Then we obviously, I think, should also check with the technical community on its ramifications. We can actually do that homework if you think that's something which will be useful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sarmad. So back to you, Dennis.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that clarification, Sam. So since you mentioned IDNA 2003 and 2008, so it is true IDNA 2003 made explicit reference to the different label delimiters in which there are different examples as dots using across different scripts or input methods, and IDNA 2008 does not make a reference. It's not that it removed it, it's just the IDNA 2008 is a protocol for labels and not domain names per se. And so because the label delimiter is not part of the label, is that not reference what a label delimiter should be. So that's one thing. So it's not explicitly there, but it's because of the nature of IDNA 2008. It is a protocol for the label and not the domain name. So the second part is the user experience. So we know, and we can reach out with to our Chinese end users or Chinese UASG members, and to confirm what's the behavior of the open dot in their, for example, a browser and how it interprets it. I just did a quick check in Chrome, and if, when you use an open dot, it will transform it to or map it to a the full period, the full stop that we know, right? This is 002E. And so despite what we believe or think, that's what the user experience is. I mean, part of the UA is part of the user experience. And I don't think we want to encourage that when a user experience doesn't have or different realities do not have the full stop available in their input method. They have to switch back and forth, you know, to input the full stop because it's not in their natural keyword settings. And that was the case for many years, right, for the Chinese. And I know it's the reality for Armenian as well. And so not recognizing the usage of these label delimiters, I think it's counterproductive to what we're trying to achieve. And so I don't think we need to push for one way or another, but to recognize and acknowledge the different realities out there in terms of these label limiter. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. That was quite useful. Jim, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Jim. I'm in agreement with Dennis, and in particular, I want to point out credibility. If we recommend something without having a clear argument for why it's a good idea, that reduces our credibility. If we recommend something in one version of a document and then stop recommending it in the next version of the document, that reduces our credibility. And especially if we cannot give a clear reasoning for why we made that change and how we validated that that was a good change to make based on talking to user communities or referring to standards, just being unable to explain our reasoning reduces our credibility. So I don't have strong feelings about the open dot as a delimiter myself, but I do have strong feelings that we should carefully explain our reasoning, whichever decision we make, and that we make our decision based on user community advice, not based on what we as foreigners to the script think is good. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, for that. Sarmad suggests that we do some homework and then close this particular point in the next meeting. I am fine with that because Sarmad would like to check with the Chinese community and the technical people. But I think Dennis's argument is quite a strong one about the user experience. If users are, even if it's an obscure feature, but people are using it, then it does not make much sense to interfere with that. Jim, you have another point? Please go ahead.
Yes, this is Jim with a separate point. A while ago in UASG, I made the comment that it is difficult to use UASG to develop a test plan because it's hard to copy domain names from the PDF file and paste them into code. And so Sarmad and I worked together to make a text file that had the UASG 004 domain names in a plain text file. And I don't know what the status of that plain text file is. My recommendation is that we keep it consistent with however we change UASG 004 and that we publish it as an authoritative document that's a companion to UASG 004. So I continue to have that recommendation, and I don't know what the status of that is.
I'll respond to that, but Sarmad, please go ahead.
Right. So it's obviously been with me. It was updated, and there were some small issues found. But then, to address that, and then I guess some other issue, I guess these larger discussions suggested that this be taken up by the tech working group for further discussion. There are two ways forward, and whichever way you suggest, we'll take that. One obviously is that we revise it and then publish the updated version as well as the TXT version of the updated version. The second option, of course, is that we just publish the version we have right now, the text version right away. Obviously, that doesn't, that's not, that's a reasonably trivial exercise. The work's already been done, thanks to Jim. We just go ahead and publish it. And then when we get this updated version of 004, we just update the text document as well. Whichever way you all suggest, we'll proceed accordingly. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sarmad. I think my own choice would be to publish both together as a companion document, as Jim suggests. I think this point came up in some of the ICANN 68 sessions as well. So I think it is important to the community, and I would support going ahead with and keeping it in sync with the main document. So we have now two points on UASG 004. The first is about the Chinese dot, and the second is about the companion documented as a text form so that people can easily cut and paste. So both these, we can take the final decision in the next meeting if there's any background context to be dug up, which Mohammed or Sarmad or both can help us. Jim, is it a new hand?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Yeah, please go ahead, no problem.
Jim, with the third thing, as I was going through UASG 004, I discovered some errors in it, and I don't know if those errors, what the state of those errors are. I know that I talked to them, to Sarmad about them. Do we just incorporate those fixes in the next version of USG 004 along with whatever else we change, like new domain names, or is there a separate revision to fix those errors?
So what has been the practice, Sarmad? Please go ahead.
So I think there are some obvious errors, which I would suggest that we fix. So for example, they are just spaces in email addresses and things like that, which obviously are not correct. So there was just potentially some issue when this PDF was generated, which creates a, you know, this copy paste error with a space. So those kind of errors I suggest we fix, which are obviously errors, but we don't change the content otherwise. Publish a version, and you know, we can do that I guess within this week, and then once the USG changes are made in USG 004 over next few weeks and we finalize the next version, then we'll generate another text version for publication.
Thanks, Ahmed. Sounds good to me. So shall we then go ahead to the next agenda item?
Sure. Satish, just one comment. Jim, if you have any comments, or we can share it with us, I mean, myself or Sarmad, or we can have a text editable version if you want to comment on the document, share that as well.
Okay. So, so Jim says he'll send the corrections as a mail message. All right, so let's then move on. Agenda item number 3, continue to develop the SOW. So, Mohammed, could you please walk us through this agenda item? Hello. Mohammed, are you muted?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Satish. I'm just sharing my screen so then we can look at the document. Okay, are you able to see the screen?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the document. And the document have, I think, the major components that the working group seems considered for your readiness evaluation. But it need to be completed. I didn't attend the previous working group meetings before the last one, but my understanding that the document should have the scope of work for a researcher or contractor to look at the different standardization bodies or groups that's working on programming languages or standards that might affect universal acceptance, and for example W3C and HTML5, and what working group and ITF is already listed there, ITU is listed, but I'm not sure of the context. ITU is currently developing updating its indexes, its connectivity indexes, to include something called meaningful connectivity that might include multilingual, either access or domain names or IDNs, but we don't have details yet on this element. Best practices for Java and Python or developers. So this is the headlines, I guess, what I can say. Unicode, but it seems it need to be, we need to add more content in terms of giving guidance or specifics about those points. So maybe the group could discuss if this is this list is inclusive, sufficient, need to be added, updated, and if there's details to be included as well. So I think this is from my side. Not sure if there's any member who have more elaboration.
So can you scroll to the top of the document? Right, okay.
Sarmat have his raised hand.
Sarmat, please go ahead.
Right, so I think just to provide a bit more context, what we were doing is, this work had just started before we actually then moved on to FY21 planning. So I guess this got deferred a bit. What we'd done was that we've just started brainstorming, and what you see in the list is just still a brainstormed version of what could be the right organizations as far as developing or upgrading standards or best practices are concerned. But this was a very initial list, so we need to obviously make sure that we review and find out a couple of things. First of all, at the top, at the first level, you know, is this list relevant, or do we need to take some organizations out, or we want to bring some more in? So what is the final list of organizations we want to work with or standards? And then the second is that for each of those standards or organizations, what is the clear ask or target which we want to achieve? So for example, is there a particular standard which we want to address and how, and so on. There is also some similar discussion which is going on in EAI working group, which has some overlap, for example, in the context of what working group. So I think at some point when we've shortlisted and have a more deterministic list, we may also want to consult with them. But that's just FYI at this time. But that's where we are. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarmad. So indeed, this is a kind of rough, it's a work in progress, and an early work in progress at that. So I was just wondering what would be the best process to kind of adopt to continue this work. We could, of course, start from the top and work down, because it's been a long time since we worked on this, gap of about more than a month. So I think the initial preamble, the purpose and all is fine. excuse me. Description work, yeah. So I think the background was, as Sarmad explained, we were looking at not programming languages and frameworks this time, but at standards and standards bodies that we needed to work with or influence in order to achieve a universal acceptance. So we do not know at this point how we're going to work with them, because there were several suggestions, including joining those communities, working with some of the people that are involved with us at ICANN or Universal Acceptance, etc. And we may have to have a case-to-case basis for how to work. But this particular SOW is to identify which are the organizations that we need to work with. So we are providing a list, but the contractor Sarmad, please correct me if I'm wrong. The contractor has to check and report back to us about the relevance of each of these organizations to universal acceptance, perhaps in a kind of ordered manner, meaning which is the most important and so on. Is that the kind of work we are anticipating here?
Right. So, yeah, I guess we need to figure out how we're going to actually address this as well, because this sort of goes into, I think, remediation work. And I think it's not very clear. It may actually change from case to case. So different organizations, we may need different strategies. It may not translate into something which a vendor, for example, can do. If it's just developing code or going and presenting somewhere, obviously vendor can do that. But I think in case of standards, this may actually, we would probably need to discuss a little more how different organizations, we need to interact with different organizations. Thank you. So I'm actually not sure either. I unfortunately don't have an answer. This is something we are exploring, I guess, at this stage.
Satish, if I may. I think that the description of work include that the contractor will test and evaluate the UI readiness within the following, let's say, or for the standards that those bodies produce or manage or author. So my understanding that the contractor will do a research and find out that if the tools or the languages or the systems or the standards within those bodies are UA ready, and basically report back any shortcomings, any issues, and maybe suggest how to mediate it. That's my understanding from reading the description of work.
Thanks, Mohammed. So indeed, that was part of the story, but perhaps not the whole story. Now, in some cases, this can be done. That is, the contractor does a bit of research and checks with each of these organizations and can test whether their product. But in case of the product complies with UA, but in case of frameworks, or if you take IETF, now, I'm not so sure as to what is testable there. Of course, there are documents. There are RFCs that the vendor can go through. So do we expect so there's nothing testable there, but it is more of hard research whether the specifications represented by the RFCs, allow for universal acceptance. That is a slightly different set of or rather, this is different kind of work. And then we have in this list, we have W3C and what WG, which is to do with the HTML standards. That perhaps is testable because HTML5 does have an email validation, which can be easily tested. If you look at ITU, again, I'm not sure what specifically is testable there. OpenID perhaps is testable. Number six, best practices for Java Python developers. That is completely, I don't know whether it fits into this list at all. Then this M3A working group, I don't know what that is. It's Unicode best practices. Yeah, so if it is this document, we can perhaps check for so checking versus testing. So that seems to be the mix up here. Some of these sources, standards organizations, we can check if their output mentions universal acceptance. In some cases, we can test directly with code. IGF, I don't know. IGF, there is no direct, there's nothing to check, not to test. In the case of IGF, can you scroll down further after 9? So is that the end of it? Okay. Yeah, so I'd welcome any comments on how to deal with this rather mixed list. Is it viable? Yes, Sarman, please go ahead.
So just a suggestion for all of you to consider. I think, first of all, as you are suggesting, we need to segregate, obviously, the technical from the non-technical and focus on the technical bit first. And then within technical, I think we obviously need to focus more on standards rather than programming languages, because that's already been covered through other SOW. I think it may still take quite a bit of time for us to possibly go into each one, try to figure out what is relevant within, for example, IETF, or what is relevant within different groups. So one possible option would be that we actually focus the SOW to maybe get a contractor who can actually do that homework for us and come back with an answer saying that, you know, these are some of the technical standards which basically USG should look at, and for each of these technical standards, these are the potential relevant items or gaps which need to be addressed. Even if we want to go further than that, maybe also make a short suggestion on what would be a reasonable way to address those gaps with a particular organization. But I'm just thinking that if we take this through a detailed analysis within the working group, we may actually end up spending a lot of time, and maybe asking somebody who's more well-versed in some of these technical organizations to take a look and come back with a short report. That's one suggestion. Of course, if you guys want to take this forward within the working group, we can obviously help and support in the process as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarman. I think that's a useful suggestion. Let's discuss further. Yes, Jim, please go ahead.
This is Jim. I've been posting a lot in the chat as I've been reading through this and thinking about it. I think I'm about to agree with Sarmad and say that basically the same thing he's just said, but in different words. My way of looking at this is, if I was a contractor wanting to do this work, would I understand what I'm supposed to do and what value I am delivering to UASG at the end of the work? And I'm not very clear about that. But from listening to Sarmad just now, one way I could think of it is, UASG wants the contractor to explore a group like W3C or a group like the M3AAWG, and go from, we just know this group exists and it probably has something to do with us, to give us a list of specific standards or activities that this group does, explain why they're important to the UASG mission, explain what interest UASG or what UASG may want to lobby this group for, and provide contact points for this group. So we take something amorphous like W3C things that maybe are related to UASG, and we turn it into a specific list of topics, standards, contact points, and questions to push them on. That, I think, is work that's feasible to specify for a contractor, and that it's clear enough that the contractor could do it. We also could do it. And so one thing I heard Sarmad say was maybe we just try and work on this ourselves. A useful next step might be to try and challenge all of us to do a little bit of this work ourselves between meetings and see how far we can get by ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, so I'm still kind of wondering about splitting the work between us and the contractor. First of all, Sarma, do you think there are people who can do this sort of work?
Yes.
Okay. So in that case, certainly we have our role would be, so at this point, whatever we specify here is only a kind of tentative list, because the contractor has to dig deeper, and perhaps there are organizations that we have missed out. So this is not restricted to or limited to the organizations put down here right now. These are just, this is just an indicative list. The contractor is meant to dig deeper and explore the relevance of these organizations and their output to our work, and recommend strategies of engaging with these organizations to enable universal acceptance in their own domain of work. Now, when the output of that comes back to us from the contractor, we can, of course, go through it, dig deeper, and make our own judgment about how to kind of carry out this activity. And we can apply our time at that point. The difficulty with starting at this level is that it will be stretched between several meetings, and it will take probably a month or more than a month or even more than that to get done. So if this is not a significant budget load, then I favor getting the initial research done by a qualified contractor, and then our time to be spent on evaluating the output of the contractor, and then deciding on strategies for each and every entity mentioned there. Any comments? Mohammed, okay, Sarmad, I see your hand up, please go ahead.
Right, I was actually going to suggest that if this is generally an okay direction for the tech working group to proceed, what perhaps we could do as a staff is try to capture this discussion into the SOW and bring share a revised version with the list, which actually takes it in that direction, and then maybe that can be reviewed in the next meeting and finalized.
Right. So does anybody think this is not a good idea? I don't see any hands up. Okay. So Sarmad, I think Mohammed, and you can go ahead and come back. This needs a cleanup. Current version doesn't look very, it's just a kind of our brainstorming put down on paper. So maybe we can take out some of this non-relevant items from this and clean it up and kind of come back in the next meeting where we can approve this and get started on it right away.
Okay, sure. We'll provide a revised updated version for the next meeting.
Right. So can we go back to the agenda, please?
Okay, the next item on the agenda is code scanning, and basically that's for GitHub code scanning tool. Last meeting, Mark D gave a brief, intro about the tool that's recently been released in GitHub to do code scanning, just to ensure that there's no malicious code or there's no security issues in the code in GitHub. And the suggestion was that to try to reach out and include UA related checks within this tool. That's my recollection from the last meeting.
Yeah, that's correct. So there was this automated tool that would check for compliance against various security issues. And Mark's suggestion was that, can we also include UA as the kind of one of those items so that we can understand the, because it'll be it can cover so many projects at once, if that if you're successful in putting UA into that particular framework. Are there any comments on this? If we are convinced about the feasibility of this, we can ask Mark to tell us what are the next steps to do this, get this done.
If I may suggest, I think that the best way to go around this, that we need to have clear details about what we're asking, what is the tool linked to it, and details. And so basically we can try to start an informed discussion or reach out to GitHub based on that. So we need more details, and we can list an action item on Mark or reach out to him to provide those details if needed.
Yeah, I think since the GitHub projects are written in so many languages, the code, we cannot look for a particular code pattern directly because it is very much dependent on the programmer and the language and so on. But there may be a meta representation of what we need to look for. I think we should get back to Mark and say, ask him how this could be done. So do we have to provide sample code, or when we say a UA complaint, a complaint code, how do we represent that compliance in terms of something that the tool can use? So for that, we need to know how the tool is taking input. If Mohammed, you can talk to Mark and come back in the next meeting on how to kind of course, convincing GitHub is another a totally different problem. But whether it's feasible at all is, I think, the first step. And if Mark can tell us how this can be done, then we can look at doing that and then contacting GitHub for further, and I don't know whether this is optional. That means any project that wants to scan itself, or any user that wants to scan a project, is a user going to scan it by calling this tool? I do not know. So we need some more details about this particular framework.
Atish, Jim have a raise hand, and he has some explanations.
Jim, please go ahead.
Yes, I missed Mark's explanation at last meeting, but I know that last month or 6 weeks ago, goodbye, Dennis, there was a GitHub developer conference. They talked about the code scanning, and I believe I sent an email to the UA Tech working group describing the code scanning presentation they gave and giving a link to their video about code scanning. Do we have archives of the UA Tech mailing list, Sarmad or Mo?
Yes, we should be able to get that information.
Is it easy for me to find the URL to an email that was sent to this list? Because what I can do is find the URL and just link everybody to that previous message.
Sure. So the archives of this email list, UA Tech Working Group, you mean?
Yes.
That's publicly available, I think, should be. Okay. We can share the link.
I'll go look for it. But in any case, the top level explanation is GitHub has acquired a company, and the company's business is writing tools which can look for patterns in code, and they have the ability to scan code in a list of languages, including Java and a few other languages. And it was intended to find security problems, and it can do things like trace through a variable that was input from a user and then is passed to a database without being sanitized, that kind of thing. So it's able to be quite sophisticated. I think it's worthwhile to find out more, to watch their video. Thank you, Satish, for posting the link to that. And then that will explain pretty well what's possible. Specific next steps for this group, I think one good step would be to say, if it was possible for us to do this code scanning, what would we want to achieve with it? What would we results would we want to get from that code scanning? Because that can help point us in the right direction. A second thing would be have somebody learn the code scanning technology and write some sample scanner code to look for some specific UA related usages, just to prove that it can be done and see how much work it is to do. A third thing is to apply the best practices documents and code samples we've got to come up with goals for things that code scanning should look for. So for example, for Java, we have a training that says, if you use this library for sanitizing your domain names, you have these drawbacks. If you use the second library, you have a second set of problems. And so one goal of code scanning could be apply those sample codes for IDN libraries and make a report on which of those libraries a particular program uses and give error messages to the developer about the problems with that code. So we use our knowledge of UA to specify what scanning tests should do. And then there's two more obvious things. One is maybe it's write a statement of work for hiring somebody to develop the code scanning code to test those things. And a second is figure out how to get those scans run. And that might mean talking to GitHub about, we are universal acceptance, we're marvelous, you should adopt us as a project. Or maybe it means getting funding or maybe to run these code scans on public code. Maybe it's offering to projects that they can use our scanning algorithms on their own code, something like that. Anyway, that's what I think would be our next steps. And I've talked enough.
Thanks, Jim. I think developing a code scanner as a project on GitHub to be used for IDN kind of reporting, both for GitHub projects as well as for any project that wants to run it even outside GitHub, could be very useful. Sarmad, please go ahead.
Right. So just to let you know, so this project obviously has two layers, right? There is a crawler which would allow you to go through the GitHub code, and then there is the second layer, which is actually testing for a specific signature. Whether it's security or UA or whatever signature. Again, I think what we're saying is that we're going to be able to reuse the crawler bit, and then we actually have to develop our own code, which tells us, what signatures we are looking for, and whether we find that and how do we flag issues and so on. In this context, just FYI, we're actually already running a project which Mark is doing for us. This project was, finalized by the measurement working group. So it is already, the current project is sampling Python and Java code on GitHub. So it is actually already developing a crawler and then using the meta information. And then it is actually exploring what are issues which are found, on how do we find issues around UA within the given Java Python code. So this is work which Mark's already doing. I think the right time to go do this second perhaps investigation would be when we actually get output or results from the current study, where we, Mark and his team come back with very clear recommendations on what they've found, what were the issues, how do we find these signatures for UA gaps, what do we test? And once we have a very clear, or not very clear, but at least a clearer picture of how do we determine UA gaps and UA compliant code based on our current project, I think that would be a good time to go into perhaps scaling that up maybe, and then obviously this particular GitHub crawler and code or project may actually come in very, very useful. I think the current project which is underway is helping us determine that second layer of you know, what are the signatures which we are looking for from right. the UA context. Thanks.
Thanks, Sarmad. So I note that we are 4 minutes above our time limit. So, but before I close, Sarmad, when is Mark's work going to be concluded?
He was supposed to come back to us in July. I can go back to him and find out. Unfortunately, some of our projects have been delayed because of the COVID situation. So I can go back to him, find out, and come back to you with some dates. Thank you.
Right. Thanks very much. So I'd like to thank everybody who's joined this call. It has been a very productive call. We'll see you in a couple of weeks time now. Back to you, Mohammed, for closing the call.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Satish. We'll end up the call and we'll follow up on the action items and submit the required documents even before the next meeting. Thank you very much,
everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.